Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the podcast that gives you a British take on baseball. We're here for another one of our pre-season preview podcasts. I am, back in the hot seat, your host, John McGee. And joining me today to talk all about last year's fairy tale Cleveland Indians is the proprietor of the England Tribe website, Ash Day. How are you, Ash?
I'm very good, John. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. Not too bad. Excited to be doing one of these. It's the first one I've done, so you're going to have to bear with me. I'm sure you'll be a really good guy through the questions. Right, we'll start at the beginning, I guess. The usual first question is, what made you an Indians fan? So let's start there. What made you an Indians fan then, Ash?
It started probably about 2003. I was really into my basketball. I walked into an old all sports shop. I think they closed down a while ago now. And I picked out a LeBron James jersey just because I thought it wasn't the Chicago Bulls, it wasn't the Lakers, and it looked pretty good. And then as I started getting into other American sports like NFL and MLB, I decided to keep all my teams in the same city. As I was doing more research into baseball, I was like, no, I'll just stick with Cleveland.
And what took you onto baseball? If you started as a basketball fan, how did you make the transition across? Was it just, I'll give them all a go, really?
I think I'd always kind of, ever since I was younger, I've had an obsession, maybe not an obsession, a fascination with Americana in general, from food to travel to film, and then in sports as well. I just kind of picked up baseball naturally. I remember my brother came back from New York once with a glove for me when I was about 10, and I was just fascinated by this glove. I was putting it on the wrong hand. I had no idea how it worked. And then ever since then, kind of the baseball bug was in the back of my head. And when I got a bit older to understand the sport and all the rules, I kind of just fell in love with it.
And what is it about the sport that you like the most? I mean, a lot of people say it's the sort of history or the pace of the game or the labyrinthine rules or the stats. Is it all that stuff for you?
I think it's probably the history the most. I studied history at university, so history was a big part of it. I mean, the sport is 100 years old and, well, over 100 years old. And it's funny because football, our football, is older, well, if not as old as baseball, but the history isn't celebrated as much as they do in America. They really celebrate their baseball history. That's a big fascinating part of it for me, definitely.
Yeah, and history is obviously a big part of Cleveland sports as well. You know, the curse is now on Cleveland, and we'll come to that in a moment. And also, history may be sometimes in a bad way. I'm going to spring this on you. We didn't say we're going to ask this question, but how do you feel about the Indians as a brand and their place in American society and in American history? Because it's a pretty divisive thing over in the States, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I think with us not winning it last year, I think, yeah, you're right. It definitely, the drought as such has switched over to us now. But the Cavaliers winning the NBA title last year went some lengths to helping out with that. The Browns, just don't talk about the Browns at all.
And what about the Indians as a brand and the chief, dare we mention him? Is that something that you have a view on?
I do, yeah. It's a divisive topic, and I know there's a lot of Indians fans that would disagree with me, but I would advocate for them moving away from Chief Wahoo. I don't think it's a very good logo at all, and I don't think it's too PC to say they should get rid of it.
No, I think I agree with you. I showed my girlfriend Chief Wahoo for the first time this afternoon, and she was absolutely horrified by it. So she's an independent observer. I guess they've got problems.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a caricature cartoon character of a Native American chief, but it just doesn't really work these days. And when I was first deciding on picking, like when I first committed to making the Indians my team, I very nearly went somewhere else because I just hated the logo. I was like, it looks naff.
Yeah, it's really not good, isn't it? I mean, it's sort of, I could see how it appeals to children in the same way that a man dressed as a jalapeno. So I saw that yesterday. There's a minor league team called the Ballapenos. It's just awful. Anyway, we should move on from Chief Wahoo, as should everyone, I think. So I think one of the things we're interested to find out is how people watch the games. Is it on MLB TV? Do you watch it on your tablet, laptop, or do you have one of the TV apps?
MLB TV on the PS4. I use that app, and having it on the iPad is great as well. So I switch between those two most often.
Yeah, you have it on the laptop when EastEnders is on, sort of thing.
Definitely our Sunday evening, those early games. It's when we get into the season when Britain's Got Talent and X Factor's on. I put my headphones in on the iPad, definitely.
Well, yeah, I think we're quite fortunate in that they never quite make the television in our house, but
Oh yeah.
nevertheless, whatever else it is, I always find an excuse.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to the Indians substantively as a team, I was gonna, well, the question we have here is what happened last season, but I guess people know what happened. It was Game 7, and it was the fairy tale very much almost being realised. 3-1 up with half a pitching squad. Rajai Davis taking the big bad wolf of pitching deep to try and to almost win the game in the eighth. But ultimately, Romance had a different view. So we all know about that, but how did that come to pass? Why did the Indians, why was it so good last year?
I think it was a combination of a lot of things. I think with like Kipnis and Lindor in the middle of the infield just absolutely blossoming as a partnership, I think the rotation was so strong all year until those injuries hit, which affected us so much in the postseason. And I think once we added Andrew Miller from the Yankees, I think we just kicked on really. I think someone like quite underrated, like Carlos Santana, been a mainstay in the lineup for a few years now, but last year he had a real career year, especially with his home runs, as did Napoli as well. He was so much better than we could have ever expected. And yeah, they just kind of rode the momentum into October. I never expected them to sweep the Red Sox. I thought it'd be much more of a battle. Honestly, I thought we'd probably go out. When we went to Toronto, I thought, okay, well, we're doing all right. Let's see how far we go. And we pushed over Toronto relatively easily. I think we only dropped one game. So yeah, to even make the World Series was just amazing. It was, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I didn't think you were going to push the Red Sox over either, to be honest, but maybe I shouldn't have been so optimistic.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, as an Indians fan, I'm rarely optimistic. As a Cleveland fan, there's rarely optimism. So to do as well as they did and to come so close, it was gut punching, but I didn't even think we'd make it that far. So it was just an absolute like whirlwind.
So you touched on it a little bit there that you had not quite career years, but really excellent production from a few players who you maybe didn't expect it of. And I was going to mention Boston Red Sox favorite Mike Napoli, Carlos Santana. You obviously mentioned yourself, and Jose Ramirez was another one. Was that what it was? Was it riding on the coattails of players such as those three, and certainly in the playoffs, someone like Josh Tomlin who was performing out of his skin? Was it just a case of everyone offering that extra 10%, which maybe got you as far as you did?
I think so, yeah. I think with all the injuries, especially to the rotation, I think they all just went another level, especially someone like Tomlin, who started this 2016 so well, had an awful like dog days of summer where he just couldn't stop giving up home runs. But then he really knuckled down in October and he was just an absolute hero.
And what part do you think Napoli played? You know, it was the party at Napoli's became a bit of a meme for the Indians last year, and he certainly did the same thing in Boston. He was very heavily involved in the beard thing. So was that a big part of the team's spirit and carrying it over?
Yeah, I think he became like the figurehead of the team. And I know he got on with Francona really well, So I think, I think having him there kept the team really loose. Having players like Lindor and Kipnis and Jose Ramirez, they're just having smiles on their face all the time. I think that's it. I think they didn't have any expectations and they just carried through with it into a great year.
I wondered if you had any message for Jonathan Lucroy.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny. Now I look back on like the prospects we were going to give up to get him, and I'm so glad we didn't now. As weak as a catcher is considered in Cleveland, I still think I would never have given up who we were going to give up for Lucroy. Yeah, even though we lost in Game 7, at least we were there, and Lucroy wasn't, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, you certainly had the last laugh, and he's also got a tiny, very weirdly shaped head, so everyone's a winner.
Yeah.
So, moving on to this season, there's been a little bit of personnel change. Obviously, two of the heroes of the playoffs last year, Mike Napoli, has moved on. He's now down in Texas, although he's been replaced in rather strong fashion. We'll come on to that in a minute. Rajai Davis has gone. He hit that iconic home run. But the team is broadly the same. So I guess you'll be looking for more of the same, particularly with two of your studs in Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco back, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been weird this spring training. There hasn't been a lot of competition for barely any positions. With the recent news that Kipnis is going to miss a couple of weeks into April, there's a bit of a second base position battle at the moment. But other than that, everybody's pretty stocked and set where they are. And with Carrasco and Salazar hoping to be back to full health, we should start the season relatively strong. Carrasco's had a bit of soreness in his arm, or some swelling recently in his arm, but I think he'll be fine.
Coming on to that big signing of the offseason, first base replacement for Mike Napoli in Edwin Encarnacion. How surprised were you when that one was announced?
Yeah, you could say it was the best early Christmas present an Indians fan could ever have, especially with the deal that you got. I couldn't believe we managed to get him on a 3-year deal for $60 million. It's just nice to see the league in general getting away from these old 7 to 10 year long albatross contracts. I couldn't believe we managed to actually pry him away from, you know, teams like the Red Sox. And I'm kind of surprised the Blue Jays were willing to let him go.
So you've got Encarnacion, you've got a full rotation such that Ryan Meritz is back in AAA. You've got some of the biggest stars in the game in Lindor and Kipnis and Brantley back to full health. What is wrong with the Indians, if anything? I mean, I was racking my brains and thinking, is it depth if you get two or three injuries and you've got Michael Martinez running out there every day? That seems a bit of a worry, but is that it?
I think the weakest position in regards to depth is probably catcher at the moment. Yan Gomes is still... I mean, a couple of years ago, 2014, he won the Silver Slugger. He looked like a star, and he just kind of regressed since then. But he's had a lot of injury problems, so hopefully now he's back to full health. He can kick on. Roberto Perez is his understudy, and he did all right last year, but didn't really set the world alight. I think at the moment, those two are just holding the position, keeping it warm for the prospect we've got, Francisco Mejia. I hope I've pronounced that right. So he's on his way up. But yeah, I think depth, I think we're relatively good with depth. I mean, even with the recent injury of Kipnis, it means probably Jose Ramirez is going to slide over to second base until Kipnis is back. And at third base, we've got Giovanni Urshela, who's amazing with the glove. And then we've got Yandy Diaz, a prospect coming through, who's absolutely lighting up in spring training at the moment. So we've got quite a bit of depth, even in the outfield. I would have argued before the spring that Naquin in center field was probably a weak spot, but then we've got Abraham Almonte backing him up. We have a healthy Brantley. We can tune some players and move them around. So we're relatively strong across the board, but as with any team, injuries will take their toll and shape the season.
And what about the bullpen? Andrew Miller can't throw three innings every day for the whole of the season. And you've got him and Cody Allen, who were obviously absolutely incredible, but it looks maybe a little bit thin after those two.
Yeah, I think with the bullpen, once you get past Allen and Miller, you're definitely into our reserves. But we've just recently added Boone Logan, who had a good year last year with the Rockies. So I think with his addition, it's a pretty strong bullpen. I mean, Brian Shaw doesn't get a lot of plaudits, but he's solid. I think the bullpen won't be too much of a problem as long as Miller and Allen pitch to their expectations.
Great. So it all seems set fair. A lot of the pundits are tipping the Indians for the top again, that it could even be you and the Cubs in the World Series. I mean, placing aside the fact that that's clearly nonsense and it's absolutely impossible to predict anything this far out in a game like baseball, nevertheless, it seems on paper like it's not a completely crazy starting point. Do you sort of feel the same?
Yeah, I think it's very weird going into a season with such high expectations. As an Indians fan, we haven't been like this since 2008, when we came off the back of a really good 2007. So it is really, with the AL Central still being pretty weak, we should be winning the division and we should be, you know, going deep into October. But like you said, it's so hard to predict this early on. So we will see.
Yeah, we certainly will. So we're going to move on to the more sort of quick fire questions now, starting with the more sensible ones and moving increasingly towards absurdity. So the first one is, can you give us an outside player? We've talked about some of the superstars that the Indians have got, and there are a fair few of them, but who's a guy who goes unnoticed by the everyday fan who should get a bit more recognition?
I think a player that hasn't received like nationwide acclaim, who I kind of mentioned earlier, is Carlos Santana. This is his free agent year, so he'll have a point to prove for any potential suitors in 2018. Last year, he hit 34 home runs, career high. He's an on-base machine, always has been. He's got the most incredible plate discipline I've seen. And I think this year he'll be playing more first base than he did last year. I think Encarnacion will do most of the DHing. So I think we'll see a lot of Santana, and I definitely would say he's probably the most underrated player in the squad.
Great. Well, we'll mark him on our cards and keep an eye out.
Yeah.
And in terms of a bold or wild prediction for the season, do you have one of those? It needn't be Indians based, but if it is, all the better.
A wild prediction. I don't think the Cubs is going to repeat.
You heard it here first.
That's my wild prediction. They're very strong. They're going to be the favourites, but I just don't think they're going to repeat. I think last year, getting that monkey off their back is going to carry over to this year. And I think they aren't going to be able to do it again.
They can't do it without Grandpa Rossi.
That's it. He's too busy dancing.
He certainly is. Yeah, I've seen those clips.
I can't do it.
Well, I don't tell anyone, but I'm secretly a bit of a Strictly fan, so I've been quite enjoying them. And I said it was going to get more absurd, so let's carry on that tenor. Who'd get a kebab after a night out? I'm not too au fait with the Indians guys. There's one or two guys with a bit of timber on it. I would have said Napoli, but he's in Texas now, so who else?
I think Edwin likes a kebab. I think he wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah. I think you're probably right.
And he's got all that money now. He's got his new contract, so he's. I think he'd go for one.
The parrots like kebab.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He's it on his shoulder.
And if Edwin's having the kebab, who's claiming to have no cash in the taxi ride home? Who's the anti-party guy in the party clubhouse?
I think I wouldn't necessarily classify him as anti-party, but I think Lonnie Chisenhall, our old third baseman, now right fielder, I think he's got a cheeky look about him where he might say he's got his wallet.
Right, so Chisenhall, mark it down. He's lost his wallet.
Yeah.
And is he the guy to stay in and watch Bake Off as well?
I think Corey Kluber likes some Bake Off. I think
he does. He's just got
that expression. You never see him crack a smile. I think he likes a night in with some Bake Off.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Kluber watching the Bake Off. But who's going to be the crazy man? Who's going to be likely to drive barefoot to Dundee whilst eating a massive Toblerone?
I think there's a couple of candidates. I think Jose Ramirez is so wild that he could be the guy. And I also think Trevor Bauer, with all of his drones and his mayhem, I think they could do that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they're going to do it like Thelma and Louise. You could see that. Maybe
we should
write a sitcom about it. It's Bauer and Ramirez off to Dundee. Someone would commission that.
Yeah, I think they could write the script for Hollywood now.
Yeah, Trevor with his drone and all that. Yeah, that'd be fun. And we always end this by asking you or whoever we've got on to recommend a Twitter account, a blog, a beat writer that we should all be following just to keep an eye on the Indians. But I know that you yourself have your own blog. So if you want to start by giving in that a bit of plug, do go ahead.
Yeah, I do a little blog. It's more of a hobby. I wish I could spend more time writing it. It's englandtribe.blogspot.co.uk. I'm going to try and be on it a bit more this season, but it's just trying to find time in the day to write some stuff that's worth reading. As far as like beat writers go, Jordan Bastian is the best Indians Twitter account to follow by far. And a couple of good Indians blogs, Let's Go Tribe, part of the SB Nation network, and Burning River Baseball are two good ones.
Brilliant. So we'll make sure we've got those in our Twitter feed this year. We'll make sure that we've got you, Ash. How can we find you and how can we make sure we see England Tribe?
You can follow my Twitter, @ashday29. There's a link to my blog on there. And I'll be posting a few posts this season, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, we'll keep an eye out for it. We'll make sure that we retweet it and like it. And so we make sure that the people who are following our podcast and our blog are picking it up too. Of course, anyone who's not already following us, you can follow us on Twitter @batflips_nerds. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. And at our new website, good work to Tom for putting a hell of a lot of hard work into sorting that out. What I'd done before was an absolute shambles, and he sorted that out whilst I was away playing at Moving House and things like that. And that's at batflipsandnerds.com now, which is exciting. So have a look at that. But before we do that, before anyone does that, all that remains for me is to say thanks to Ash for your time. We'll be following you this year, and good luck to the Indians. Thanks a lot, Ash.
Thank you for having me, John. Cheers.
No problem.